experiences in different places. We also have, and have for a while, had something called the Dirty Dozen campaign, where a list of very hazardous pesticides are targeted. We'd like to get rid of them.
At the organ always weary and ill at ease. My fingers wandered idly over the ivory keys. I know not what I was playing or what I was doing there. Like the sound of the last amen. Like the sound of the last amen.
Good evening, this is Henry Kaiser. Welcome to a special KPFA program with English guitarist, improviser, musical pioneer, Derek Bailey. Mr. Bailey's in town to play a concert at Concepts Cultural Gallery in Oakland, Sunday night at 8 and 10 p.m., two shows. And I'd like to welcome Mr. Bailey. Derek, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening.
How are you today?
I'm not too bad.
Good. Well, we've been listening to a little bit of your guitar playing there at the beginning of the program. It's probably not what people are used to hearing. It's not something we see in record stores here a lot, or not something we hear on the radio a lot. You've been playing guitar for a long time?
Oh, yes.
Since?
Since I was, I don't know, I suppose I first touched the guitar when I was about 7, and I'm shortly 60 years old. So that's a pretty long time. It seems a long time to me, anyway. But I played regularly for... since my mid-teens, 40-odd years.
You worked as a commercial guitar player in the commercial world of English music, dance halls, and theater and studios for many years?
That's right, for, I suppose, about 12, 14 years. I worked in various things. I started, playing the popular music that was popular when I was young, which was kind of... a lot to do with big bands. I worked in big bands and dance halls, nightclubs, later in theatres, finished up playing in the studios. It was a fairly usual kind of pattern, career pattern, that commercial musicians used to follow in those days.
It changed, didn't it, sometime during the 60s?
Well, I wasn't the only thing that changed. The music changed, as a matter of fact. The kind of business that I was in fell apart, but that wasn't really primarily the reason why I changed what I played. I found that, of course, I've told this story so many times that I found that talking about it is a little bit like playing. I find it necessary to change it. So I... You might not get an absolutely true version, of course. Who knows which one's true? I've tried so many. But roughly speaking, I kind of got a little bit sick of playing the kind of music I did, or at least the changing musical situation meant that there was much less freedom working as I did in commercial music. And also having attained this kind of studio musician situation meant that there was very often even less freedom. So I got a certain disillusionment at a certain period in the early 60s. And I was fortunate enough at that time to meet some musicians, younger people than me, who were interested in the kind of thing that was happening both in what you might call, what they used to call new music, kind of avant-garde classical music, and that's another term for it, and also in free jazz. They were interested in that. I wasn't particularly, but I met the people who, these particular people, and they seemed to be going somewhere, and I was looking for somewhere to go, so I tagged along.
This was the mid-60s?
Well, I met the two people I'm thinking about.
Gavin Bryars?
Yeah, Gavin Bryars and Tony Oxley. I met them in 63. And we worked together till 66.
And during that time, you changed the way you played guitar. Were you playing jazz things a bit like Jim Hall or something? And then what happened?
I'm not sure whether it was Jim Hall at that period. It used to change from one to another. I'd never got any great commitment to my jazz playing. I didn't care who I played like.
Well, suddenly you started playing like yourself and like no one on the planet has really ever played, a brand new way of playing guitar,
well,
to my way of looking.
A little bit later, I think when I played conventionally or when I played in conventional circles, I seemed to be thought of as an eccentric musician to a certain extent. I mean, playing with... But that's probably too long a story to get into my ideas about playing jazz. But during that period, I... Playing with these people I'd met who were playing music that I was really not familiar with at all, particularly playing, say, Cage Beasts, Stockhausen, Messiaen. Also playing what were then current recordings by Coltrane. Bill Evans had a certain influence on that group. In order to kind of work within that context, which was a real mix of musics, it was necessary to find some other way to play. This wasn't a conscious thing, it was just necessary in the practical situation. You couldn't just sit there playing Charlie Christian licks. Well, it would have been somewhat incongruous. So it was necessary to try and develop something that would be appropriate in these, what were to me, new situations. Well, what were to all of us new situations. We'd started off playing kind of current jazz of that time, 63, 64, and playing, as I say, these kind of straight pieces as well. Sometimes we'd play arrangements for this guitar, bass, and drums of something by Messiaen or Sarti also. And then we started interpolating freely improvised passages in the music, and we finished up eventually, and this was the only way we could accommodate our different approaches to playing, because the three of us were quite different and came from different places. The only way we could accommodate different kind of attitudes towards playing was to improvise freely. So we finished up after that period, this is 2 or 3 year period, playing virtually all the pieces we played were freely improvised.
What kind of environment was this in?
Well, it was kind of strange. I mean, this was in the north of England. We were working in, most of this time, we were working in the evening in a nightclub, which is where I met these two guys. I was working in the studios in the daytime and I was doing this nightclub deal. And at that time, I kind of cut down on the studio work because I found it too tedious. But we were doing 6 nights a week in this nightclub. And then we started playing in the day together. The band in the nightclub actually was quite a good band, but we started playing in the day together, and we started a club, a Saturday lunchtime club, which actually ran for nearly 3 years. These changes that happened in the groups playing took place largely in this Saturday club. At least that's where they got their airing. We would also play, as I said, regularly, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 afternoons a week, wherever we could get a space to play in.
So you say you were improvising, moving from the more new music composed pieces to improvising, and you thought it was inappropriate to play Charlie Christian licks, or they didn't do the job or whatever, so you just tried to develop your own licks, your own vocabulary. How did you think of it?
Well, that's the way, this is with these retrospective phrases. And if I were to describe it like that, that's one way of trying to convey. But that didn't happen at the time. It was not a conscious thing. It was just a way of trying to play something. After all, we were aware that we were trying to improvise, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
The one thing that we were sure of is that we weren't going to write this stuff down, because it didn't work if we wrote it down. So we were improvising, and in order to make sense in the oral sonic context, I had to play something that I hadn't played before. I guess it all came out of that, but it wasn't a conscious decision to play something different. It was just an attempt, out of the attempt to be homogeneous with the other musicians, came that way of playing. That's the way that kind of stuff seemed to work better than whatever other stuff I got available.
And then after that period came the kind of period of the fashion of free improvisation, the free music scene, and quite a few players in England, which you were one of the sort of founding fathers, along with people like John Stevens and Evan. Is that true?
Sometimes, you know, people now talk about it. Oh, they say things which give the impression that there's been some kind of golden period for freely improvised music in the past. If there has, I certainly missed it. And so, if it was in fashion, it was a strange kind of fashion.
Well, I think it was in a kind of fashion because there were a lot of records, there were a lot of players, and you saw it in the media. And now, we certainly don't see it in the media. We see, you know, a big jazz thing going on in Great Britain, and we don't see a lot written.
You know, I don't get to play in London very much nowadays, but this year I ran a little series of concerts close to where I live simply because it was convenient and I got to play with some of the musicians in London that I hadn't played with for a while. So I'm running this local concert, Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock. This is 5 miles away from the centre of London. And there were a few people turning up, 20, 30 people turning up. In the 60s, we'd play in the centre of London in a theatre. And if we got two people, we'd go and talk to them. I mean, it was so rare to get any kind of audience at all. You're right, people were taking some kind of notice, but there were no audiences for this stuff. Five or six was unknown. Very strange how people view it now. But we were making some records. We started 67, 68, I suppose.
You started a cooperative record company, too, a little after that, later. Yeah.
What was happening was that the few people who were playing this kind of thing, who were taking to improvise freely in a more or less aiming to do it in a non-jazz way, came together at that time. I suppose you could say that, from various places, and we kind of all met in London and carried on with it there. But for 3-4 years there was no noticeable response from anybody particularly. But that wasn't important. I mean, there was a very strong imperative around at that time to do it.
The imperative came from people wanting to find a new kind of personal expression to go beyond certain styles that people were popular? Or?
As Laser said, it was in the air. I mean, there were a lot of people looking for this kind of stuff at that time. But
who were some of the people in that scene who knew about that time?
Well, I suppose it's the first lot that I played with after moving down there and after playing with Tony and Gavin were the people you mentioned, Evan Parker, John Stevens, Trevor Watts, Paul Rutherford. And then there were one or two other people who kind of disappeared, and whose names I can't remember. And then after that, the next people, and they came around like a year or two later, some other people came in, Jamie Muir, Hugh Davies. Gavin Bryars was still playing with us occasionally. He'd gone to the States and he came back. But by this time he was playing live electronics. He was the first live electronics player in what became the Music Improvisation Company. Who else? I don't know, one or two other guys.
Yeah.
But it gradually seemed to increase in number, but it was still, by the time we'd made contact with the guys on the continent who were doing similar kind of things, people like Brotzmann and Han Bennink and
Germans, Dutch.
Yeah. There were still so few of us that we would all play in the same bands. Evan Rutherford and I think, played in virtually every kind of free band that was operating during this period. That is, Willem Breuker. We all played for Willem Breuker. We all played for Alex Slippenbach. We all played for Misha Mengelberg. We all played when Barry Guy started his band. and we all play together in various other combinations. But the total number of people throughout Europe playing this stuff would probably be very small. Be small enough for you all to be on the same gig now and again.
Yeah.
And there was work for it in Europe, in fact.
And so this, there were more contacts between the different countries in Europe. You and Evan Parker and Tony Oxley started Incas Records.
That's right. We did that in 70, I think.
And you used one of the first musician-run cooperative labels in Europe. You put out 40, almost near 50 records at this point.
What now?
No, if you count the CDs and things, up to that.
The LPs are up to, 52? Wow. And the CDs are up to 5.
So quite a few things, and quite a few recordings of innovative music by a wide variety of different musicians with a wide variety of approaches to improvisation, the kind of common ground of all the recordings on that label. Is that accurate?
I think, yes. Yeah. I mean, also we give free catalogues away if you were to write the 14 Downs Road, London E5. It's, they're not all in print now, but most of them are.
And that's just gone on till today, then.
Yes.
That's gone on till today, and
right.
Your guitar playing has gone on until today, and you've really...
Yes, I was doing it today, this morning, as a matter of fact.
Evolved a very personal, special way of playing a very common instrument. It doesn't sound like anybody else, I think.
Well, it's a strange instrument, and I mean, it's an amazing instrument, the guitar. Well, there's so many different ways of playing it anyway.
Maybe why don't we just, we got a little bit of history there. Why don't we talk about a guitar for a while, then we can talk about improvisation for a while. And why don't I play an example of a recent being 1985,
right.
Electric guitar solo of yours from an album called Notes on this aforementioned Incas label, where one could get a catalog by writing to Incas Records, 14 Downs Road, London East 5, England. A solo... It has a title. The title's important. Title called K from an album called Notes. And this is just a big hollow body, or medium hollow body jazz guitar, an ES-175 in standard tuning. It's like if we went down to see Joe Pass, wherever he's playing tonight, he'd be playing the same instrument, tuned the same way, but it'd sound a little different. I don't think it would sound like this. Yes, 1985, electric solo guitar. You've got a guitar here in your hands now. Why don't you just play a little short piece in the moment, and then we talk about the guitar a little bit, if you...
Sure. Can't get them shorter than that.
No. I'm sure it doesn't sound strange to me because I've listened to you for years, but I'm sure it sounds different from what people are used to hearing a guitar do. What are you doing that makes the guitar sound... Why does it sound different, Derek?
Well, it sounds pretty strange to me. I've never played this guitar before at all. This is your instrument. And it's very nice indeed, but it's a little bit kind of woody. What am I doing?
What are you doing? Where did all those funny sounds come from?
What are all those funny sounds? Well, they're notes. They're known as notes. They're sometimes described as pitches. And also you can have collections of notes together, which are called harmonies. And I play them I put them together in such a way as that they relate rhythmically.
Huh?
It's like notes, chords and rhythm, just like you get on a banjo